Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com coming up on this Tuesday edition. The CIA can hack just about anything they want to, it looks like. New report about that. Also, what are the best countries in the world? We've got a list, according to someone's thoughts anyway. Some amazing new technology in robotics and construction. We've got some details about that. And March Madness will begin pretty soon. Where do the players from the past go? Where do they end up? That and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live at 101.3 KPCG, online, kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today as well. Grant, you had a little bit of a sabbatical.
Yeah.
A few days. You refreshed, back and ready to go.
Yeah, I just feel really energized and excited about being back at work.
Yeah, it's nice to take a little bit of a breather from time to time. We've got a lot of great information for today, and we're going to jump right into it. Some headlines to just get to in the beginning here. This is a story that's just come out here recently in the last little bit. This is from Fox News. WikiLeaks releases entire hacking capacity of the CIA. No big deal. Just your entire hacking capacity. WikiLeaks on Tuesday released what it said is the full hacking capacity of the CIA in a stunning 8,000-plus page disclosure. If you need some bedtime reading, get through that. The anti-secrecy website contends, quote, is the largest ever publication of confidential documents on the agency. It totals 8,761 documents and files altogether. It's called Vault 7 Part 1. The title is Year Zero.
Part 1.
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of information out there. So anyway, they got it. They claim that it's legitimate. The CIA says they won't comment on it. The long and short of it is they can hack into about whatever they want to, if you were to believe this release. And I don't know that that would be surprising to us, but in some ways it kind of is. I mean, they're hacking into just about everything.
Well, right. I mean, I think it's hard to go anywhere without the government knowing all of your whereabouts and what you're doing if they want to. I mean, it's not too difficult to understand that they have vast powers at their disposal if they choose to use them.
Yeah, and we're all so connected that information's out there. This write-up says a collection of purported intelligence tools includes information on CIA-developed malware that, you know, gets onto your computer or your phone, and they can get information from it, bearing names such as Assassin and Medusa. Those are cool names.
There you go.
If you're going to be hacking stuff, you want a cool name. Intended to target iPhones, Android phones, smart TVs, and Microsoft, Mac, and Linux operating systems, among others. There's an entire unit in the CIA, supposedly, devoted to inventing programs to hack data from Apple products. That's their job. So, again, you know, this is what WikiLeaks says. Others may disagree. Don't know, but pretty much you have to figure if you're putting information out there on some level or reading it, somebody can see that you did it. That's kind of just the way it is.
Right. It's alarming in a way, but it's expected. Probably everyone knew that. If any government could do something like that, it would be the U.S. government.
They said there's even the potential ability to hack into vehicles. They don't know why, but a lot of vehicles have a computer in them that are running them, unless you got a really old car, and they can hack into those, I guess.
Wow.
For some reason. So who knows? Who knows what's going on there? It's pretty interesting, but again, it's like anything in life, I guess. If you don't have anything to hide, it's not as big of a deal. If you do have something to hide, then maybe it's more of a concern.
Yeah, you would think generally, though, the espionage would be directed at other countries. But the thing is, we're not immune from that either. Even Mr. Trump claims to not be immune from being surveilled illegally, possibly. So everyone is being watched in a certain way. It's just a matter of how important you are, then you'll be watched even more.
Yeah, it's so weird. Who's watching the watchers?
Yeah.
Who's the chief watcher? You just don't know.
Like the ones who are not being watched back. I don't think there might not be anybody.
Yeah, it's hard to say what's going on. Didn't they have a like a cartoon years ago? It was like Spy versus Spy or something like that, where they were always going back and forth spying on each other. And this is like what it is. Everyone's spying on everybody else. And there's so much division in the country that you could see you know, people using it against their fellow countrymen for some purpose. Who knows? It's happened before. So this is interesting. WikiLeaks is always in the mix. I think there's a lot of people that don't like that organization, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Thankfully, though, for a lot of us, we get to know some things that we wouldn't have otherwise. For just your regular people, those who consider themselves patriots, it's good to know exactly what those around you are capable of so that they can't take advantage of you necessarily.
Yeah, you're gonna have, everyone has to develop like a cone of silence in their house, you know, where if you eat real secret information, it's in the cone of silence.
Go back to like the 1800s, just no technology at all. You know,
well, that's
outhouse, everything. Yeah. Just get rid of all of it and then see if they can find you.
Well, that's what Vladimir Putin's done, right? They use typewriters right. and different things to avoid being hacked.
It's laughed at, but that might actually be a really good idea.
We've got quite a few stories here that were sent in from listeners. We appreciate that. You can send those to comments at kpcg.fm along with anything else you'd like to. And, oh, by the way, you can follow us on Twitter, too, at kpcgfm. Thought I'd throw that in there. But we had some listeners send in a few stories that were interesting. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It says, after rains, California runs out of space to store water. After years of drought, months of rains are exposing a major weakness in California's water system. Lack of storage. Who would have thought? Now there is a renewed push to expand the state's reservoirs. So they can't win. They're super dry with the drought. Then they get a lot of rain and the reservoirs aren't adequate. So they're really struggling. It's like one extreme or the other in California.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing for them to deal with, I'm sure. I mean, if you're just bouncing back and forth all the time like that, you don't have a whole lot of stability. Like, as soon as you find a mechanism for solving one problem, you're on to the next problem, and that mechanism gets old.
So they're talking about maybe expanding the reservoirs, but which makes sense, but then if you expand them, then there's a huge drought again. So a related story to that, you should go back to thetrumpet.com. There's a lot there on California. And this is a write-up from a few years back already, but it's really important. California disasters continue. Why? That's from Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury. And it says, why is all this happening to California, these different problems? And there's been a lot more since 2006. He says, I believe we must look more directly to the spiritual. So that's something you're not going to see in the Wall Street Journal or other places. They're just looking at what's happening. But there might be more to it than just is on the surface. And that's discussed there in the Trumpet magazine. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. California disasters continue. Why? And that's from the October 2006. It's always interesting when I read those dates and I think like, oh, that wasn't that long ago. And then I stop and think, I'm like, wait a minute, that was 11 years ago.
Right.
Where does the time go?
Well, yeah, that was three presidents ago already. That's just shows you how fast time goes. But that article is still relevant today because they're still having all the extremes. It still looks like they're being cursed, and so people need to ask why those things are happening.
Yeah, and it's really good to go back to that because the basic principles are still accurate, whether it's, you know, a few years later or it was right then. And more has happened since then. So what's really neat about those types of articles, you can go back and read them and then think about what's happened since, and it gives you a good barometer, like, well, did it go that way or not? So, and it has. It's continued to be an issue.
It's been dead accurate.
Yeah, so go back to thetrumpet.com. You can just search for California. You can find a lot there. That was just one article I thought would be really great to go and check out. Here's another one that was sent in from, this is from Zero Hedge. If you feel like you don't have a lot of money, you're probably right. The reality is, they say, half of Americans can't afford to write a $500 check. Yeah, you know, if you're young, 500 seems like a lot, but as you get older, that goes before you can blink.
Mm-hmm. That's tough. It's amazing how fast a paycheck can disappear. A lot of bills, obviously bills take up way more than half, and then what you do with the rest of it really determines whether or not you can write a $500 check.
They say, according to a recent Bankrate survey of 1,000 adults, 57% of Americans don't have enough cash to cover a mere $500 unexpected expense. That could just be a movie night. if you're taking your family, it's ridiculous. So it turns out that the CEO who gave these statistics was correct. While that may appear dire, it is actually a slight improvement from 2016, when 63% of U.S. residents said they wouldn't be able to handle such an expense. But still, it's not great. The survey's findings have shed light on how the so-called recovery of the past 8 years has skipped about half of the U.S. population, which literally live paycheck to paycheck and reflects a country in which many households continue to struggle with their basic finances more than 7 years after the official end to the recession. And they also pointed out, though, that, and you probably will have noticed this, people a lot of people can't afford to write a $500 check, but they spend hundreds of dollars a month on their cell phones. I mean, you don't go anywhere and not see everyone on their cell phone. Mm-hmm. The great and the not so great, everyone's got the new iPhone or whatever the phone is. And those aren't cheap. And so in some cases, it's a matter of income. In some cases, it's a matter of what you do with your income.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, all those phones are like $700, $800.
Kind of interesting just to see the way people spend their money. And then at the end of the day, there isn't a lot of money. So that's from Zero Hedge. Reality is half of Americans can't afford to write a $500 check. Another one sent in, this is related to a story we had yesterday. We were talking about just how suburbia is changing. And a lot of the malls are starting to go away because the flagship stores are leaving, like Macy's and others. This is a Wall Street Journal headline. And it says, coming soon to your local mall, celery and dog food. Grocery stores are going to start taking the place of, like, say, your Macy's and things like that. The flagship store of the mall will be a grocery store. And I think that's actually a pretty neat idea.
That's really smart because people have to go get groceries. Right. And, you know, you can combine a necessity with a luxury at the mall and do all of those things in one stop.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to a mall in Dublin, Ireland, and that had a grocery store as its main flagship. And it was strange to me. I was like, what is this? Mm-hmm. But I really liked it. Like you say, because you can get some necessities. But for me, I was just passing through and spending some time there. But it was nice to have to be able to go buy something to eat from the grocery store. It's just real quick and not that expensive and a wide variety. Because usually in a mall, you have the food court, which is dicey to say the least. And, you know, it's got the fast food and stuff. And then beyond that, there's not much. Occasionally, you'll see like a little snack shop, but again, the food's not great, and it's pretty expensive. So having a grocery store, I think, is a good idea. And like you say, it's someplace you have to go. And especially if they bring in a grocery store people like, you know, if you can put a Whole Foods in there or something, or a store that people want to go to anyway. Yeah, if you're there anyway grocery shopping, yeah, you probably, you know, if you go with your wife, you're probably like, yeah, why don't you, you know, find some groceries. I'm going to go, you know, peruse or whatever, take the kids. It's nice to be able to split up and meet back again another time. So I could see that being successful. We'll see how it works out.
That would be really nice for people who are really practically minded as well, because for a lot of people, I think there might be one or two stores where they would even think to go in. So it kind of makes the mall barely an option sometimes. But if you have a grocery store in there, and then you could also go to one or two stores that you actually care about in the mall, then you're probably going to increase your amount of customers by quite a lot.
Yeah. My daughter is, no matter where we go in the world, she is always excited if she sees a Target store. Doesn't matter where we are, like what's going on. She's like, ah, Target. So I'm like, well, yeah, I know, but there's a lot of other things to look at too.
It must have something to do with the logo.
Yeah.
The logo's, it does catch the eye, and in a way it kind of does invoke excitement.
Yeah.
Even for me, and I'm not a little kid either.
That's a Target. If you can't stop at every Target, you never get to your destination.
Exactly. They're everywhere.
So, of course, this one's happening. This was sent in by a listener as well. A celebrity who shall remain nameless tweeted that President Donald Trump is causing her to gain weight. She said she starts the day with liquids but turns to pancakes smothered in maple syrup after watching the morning news. So, I don't know. That's probably a bad thing, I guess, in the long run, because you don't want to gain a bunch of weight. But pancakes are delicious. So there's two ways to look at that.
That sounds enjoyable, and she's blaming the president. She should be crediting the president for turning her to such delicious pancakes.
Well, the thing I thought about it, beyond just being kind of funny, and I don't know if she's kind of being funny here or what, but is that, you know, if you think about the history and you think about what a lot of people have had to go through historically, it just shows you how blessed the U.S. is. If that's like a big complaint, like, I'm so upset, now I'm going to go eat more delicious food.
Yeah.
That's the complaint.
It's really sad.
A lot of people would have liked to have had that complaint over the years, you know. So I just thought it kind of shows how much we've been blessed in the U.S., but also just sort of the mentality of some people that, you know, like, that's a bad, like, that's, if that's the worst thing that you're dealing with, you're probably okay.
Well, yeah, that's just a really negative mindset in general. And it's also an excuse that people have been using. They've been blaming Mr. Trump for how they're so angry all the time. And, you know, I'm rioting in the street because Mr. Trump is the president. That's not the reason for your anger. There's something else going on there, and you're just looking for someone else to blame besides yourself.
Sort of a scapegoat. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, the pancakes, which made me think, well, I haven't had pancakes in a while. That sounds delicious. Here's a list for you. The best countries in the world from usnews.com. I'll give you a guess. How, I mean, there's a lot of countries out there. What do you think the number one? Well, let's not do it that way. Let's save number one to the end. We'll start at the bottom. We'll build the suspense. Top countries in the world. I think they've got about the top, 10 or so here. Number 10, Norway. It was not previously ranked, but it's made it to number 10. They make, the GDP is $68,592 per person.
Wow.
It's pretty solid.
That is.
That's about half of what Grant makes.
half?
A third. I don't know.
Like 1 billionth.
Somewhere there. Number nine is France. They come in number nine as the best countries in the world. They have 41,476 per capita. Australia comes in at number eight for best countries overall, according to this report, 47,644. It's not just based on income. They're looking at a few things, but they give you the income figures, so it's kind of interesting. Number seven, the United States. We couldn't even crack the top five best countries in the world.
I knew we'd be lower than we should on that list.
Yeah.
We should be number one on there.
$56,084. That's the average income.
So just by income, that's what they're talking about.
Well, no, they're factoring in a few things, but they're just giving. Those are the numbers they're giving.
Okay.
They have like their whole methodology overall, and it relates to a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah. That's less than Norway anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweden comes in at number six and $48,199 per person. Japan comes in at number five, $38,142 per person. Germany at number four. They're always doing pretty well, it seems like, $46,974 per person. The UK came in at number three. That's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess probably because a lot of the tourism is really, really neat, a lot of great history. But they're not always the favorites of people, it seems, like from some of their history and some of their policies. Mm-hmm. The liberals don't like it, but they ranked at number three, $41,499 per person. Canada, number two. Abraham will be excited about that. $45,602 per person. And number one, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure it'd be a guess. I think I already know. Do you want me to just say it anyway?
Yeah, what do you think?
Switzerland?
It is. Yeah. It's Switzerland. Best country, according to this list from usnews.com, $58,647 per person. And, of course, there's a lot of great things to do there, skiing, et cetera. Never been there, but that would be a place I'd like to visit.
Yeah, and I think they're not very confrontational. Historically, they're not involved in too many conflicts. So very peace-loving people, a very beautiful country. They have, what is that? They have, is it chocolate or cheese that they're really well known
for? Yeah, chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah, Swiss chocolate. I went to grade school with a girl that went there with her family for a vacation, which was pretty rare for people in that area, and people didn't go on exotic vacations like that very often, but they did. And I remember they brought back Swiss chocolate, and I remember thinking like, I didn't. It was, I think, a little more refined than what my palate was used to. It wasn't a Milky Way, so I didn't. It wasn't quite
not
sure,
good enough then.
Sure,
not,
what to do with
not
it? I kind
of cut it there.
So
and
anyway,
they have the Swiss Army knife.
They do, yeah, and Swiss watches, right? Those are really
right.
Nice. So, yeah, a lot of nice things there. So that's a. They say it's the best country in the world. Iran did not make the top 10. So some of those nations did not.
Depending on who makes the list, it might have.
It might actually. Have. Yeah. If they made the list, they'd been number one through 10. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. I'm Dwight Falk. Grant Turgeon and Abraham Blondeau is stopping by as well. Hello.
Hello.
Canada, second best country in the world, according to the list. You guys can't outdo the Swiss.
I don't know. If it comes down to maple syrup, we would have won.
There was more factors than just syrup, surprisingly. I'm sure there's a list out there, the best syrup in the world. But the Kia David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that. I want to put in a quick plug for a concert coming up here at Armstrong Auditorium. That's where we're broadcasting from here, the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College in North Edmond. This Thursday, March 9th at 7:30 p.m., the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine will be here. Really a great performance that will be coming up, and that'll be Thursday, 7:30 p.m. So for those listening in the local area, check it out. You can go to armstrongauditorium.org maplesurf.org to get concert information, tickets, and such. And if you're not in the local area, well, who knows? You have a few days. Maybe you want to come on down for that. Grant, you've got a really interesting story here for us. We're in the month of March, and that's March Madness for college basketball fans, one of my favorite sporting events of the year. And this is about two guys that were in the national championship game last year, didn't make it to the NBA. They're still trying to pursue their career. And it says, you kind of disappear. A year after epic NCAA final, two stars cross paths in the NBA D League, the minor leagues. What are they up to?
Well, this is talking about Marcus Page from North Carolina. He's the one who hit the game-tying shot with a few seconds left in the national championship game last April. And then Ryan Arcidi-Okono, I think that's how you say it.
That's right? A good job, because that is a tough name.
Yeah, he's the one who passed the ball behind him to the trailing Chris Jenkins, who hit the game-winning three at the buzzer for Villanova.
Yeah, you know, when I was looking at this story, I was trying to remember that game, and I was like, oh, was that a good game? And then with all that, I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, because it was like, bang, one team thinks they got it, and then the other team wins. So it was epic.
Yeah, it was probably the best championship game, at least in college basketball ever, if not one of the greatest of all time. So really an impressive game that was played, I believe, in Houston last year. And here they are almost a year later meeting in Texas again, playing in the NBA Development League, one in Salt Lake City and the other in Austin.
Yeah, because it's amazing. You watch these guys on national television do the championship run in the college, and an epic game. And, you know, you kind of think like, wow, life just couldn't get any better for them. And in a way, and that's sort of true at times, because a lot of the guys, with the exception of maybe one or two stars, don't go on, at least not right away, to professional ranks. Life carries on. You know, you achieve this amazing goal, and then the next day you go about life. They're still trying to make it to the pros, but it's a tough road for them.
And usually a telltale sign of how it's going to be a difficult road to the NBA is if they've gone all 4 years in college. If they are done after freshman year, that means they're going to be drafted high in the NBA and pretty much be guaranteed fame and stardom their whole lives after that. But if you go all 4 years, that means that probably NBA teams weren't looking at you earlier. For me personally, it doesn't really make a lot of sense why any player would want to leave college, which is pretty much like a paradise after just 1 year. Yeah. I mean, the riches are going to come anyway, and over those 4 years, you can grow and mature. I couldn't imagine getting millions of dollars when I was 19 years old.
That, and a lot of people have problems with that. You know, it's interesting. I saw this video, I think it was last week, where they were talking about if you're a general manager for an NBA team, how do you save your job? Because a lot of it depends on who you draft. You have to draft well. And they said, even though it might not be the right decision, if it comes down to an international player or a U.S. college player, always take the U.S. college player. The reason being is that the owners usually don't pay a lot of attention to basketball, but they watch March Madness. And so there's a guy that gets on a hot streak, you know, like a Jimmer Vredette. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, we got to get Jimmer Vredette. Even though, you know, as a GM, he probably won't pan out. But they say if you draft that guy and it doesn't work out, you can always go to the owner and say, well, we both liked him. Mm-hmm. Because the owner watched him play in March Madness. So you get guys like this, like Page and others, who they have this really brilliant run, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to succeed at the next level.
Right, and at least in their case, you know, being in the D-League doesn't mean you're doomed to never make it to the NBA.
D for doomed, the doomed
right?
league.
The doomed league. But obviously they need some more polish before they're able to play at the highest level. One of these two guys actually estimated that this is maybe the fifth best league in the world after NBA, Germany, China, I think Spain as well. So even though it's the second league below the NBA, it's actually really high level stuff. And it's also surprising more fans don't go. I know it's not the highest level, but you can sit center court a row or two up for like $12. I mean, that would seem to be worth it, especially when the guys are as good as they actually are.
Yeah, and you've gone to a couple, because we
have great. It's
here
fun.
And you liked it? It was a good experience?
Oh yeah, definitely. And there's only a few hundred people there, so you can hear everything the players are saying. And I think the players know that, so they're not saying anything too bad, thankfully. So you get to know a lot about what's going on.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of the game and if you follow college a little bit, you're going to know the players. And then there's some guys that have been successful in the NBA and maybe for whatever reason didn't catch on with the team here later in their career, and they're kind of going and playing in the D-League. And it's amazing. I think you've told me about how good those guys are. even though they're not playing NBA right now, they're still in the D League, mm-hmm. just dominating.
Right.
It just, it's amazing the different levels of ability as you get up to those higher ranks.
Yeah, the levels of ability are, it's so minuscule, the difference between NBA and the D League. The only difference I could really tell was that guys in the D League who even stood out, they're not quite as good at creating their own shot, you know, doing all the fancy dribbles and beating a guy one-on-one to make a shot. But they actually, for that reason, they actually play better as a team. There's better defense, better passing. So from a fan standpoint, it's probably a better game to watch.
Yeah, and they're a lot less expensive to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of these two players, Paige and the other guy, who's
Arcidi Okono.
right. So it's their first year in the D League, and I think, like the article pointed out, I mean, it is sort of a different lifestyle for them, because in college, especially being at some bigger universities, and the travel's a little better and stuff, and now you're maybe flying the same day you're playing.
Right.
You get off the plane, you got to play that night. You're staying in hotels, they're not bad, but it's not the best. You're roughing it, but I mean, it's not the NBA lifestyle for sure, or even the high college level lifestyle.
Exactly. And for that reason, those guys are really hungry to make it to the top level. That's what both of these guys mentioned, was that obviously they're not where they want to be yet, and so they are scratching and clawing and doing everything they can, and all the guys around them are. It's not some half-hearted thing where they've already made it, they're already rich, they already have a gigantic guaranteed 6-year contract. These guys are trying to get to that point, and so they haven't lost their desire to become the best they can be.
It's amazing how when guys are really fighting to get there in the first place, they'll play so hard and work so hard, and there's not a lot of money in it. But then once you've made it and you get the guaranteed money, Andrew Bogut, right? Last night he played his first game for the Cleveland Cavaliers. They picked him up as a free agent. He's a really good player. Plays 1 minute and he breaks his leg.
Yeah.
And he's done for the year, but he's got guaranteed money.
Right.
So he's sitting there, not it's his fault, but he's sitting there making millions. These guys are struggling. There's another example, Jose Calderon, who was the Golden State Warriors picked him up free agency or traded for him or something. Then they decided they didn't want him, so they cut him, but they paid him 2 hours for almost $500,000.
Yeah.
It's the difference in the money once you kind of get into the loop, you know. So I'm like, I could have done that. I could have gone there with Jose Calderon and just walked through the building once and get out of here and give me $500,000. I'm good.
Yeah, apparently they decided to sign Matt Barnes instead because they needed someone to fill Kevin Durant's place. And then so they just said, well, Calderon, we already promised you this money, so we'll pay you anyway,
right?
Even though you're not going to do a thing for our team.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean, in a way you'd be like, oh sweet, but you probably feel kind of guilty too, like I didn't even do anything.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a very different experience, and especially when you consider that even when you talk about NCAA level compared to D League level, I would guess it's probably not even close. The D League, I think they're going to name it something like the Gatorade League pretty soon,
right?
But that is way higher level than NCAA, and yet NCAA games, you have 20,000 fans packing the stands, millions watching on TV. Mm-hmm. Here you have a couple thousand at best, maybe, probably a few hundred usually, and then maybe a couple hundred more watching on some Facebook live stream.
Yeah, it's amazing just to see the difference there. And, you know, I think about that when I watch college basketball games, because to make it to that level at a big university, I mean, you've got to be outstanding. You've got to have been the best player in your high school, probably one of the best in your state. And you look at the 10 guys on the floor and you think maybe one will go to the next level, maybe one. And the rest of them, you know, get regular jobs and then kill everybody at the local rec league every weekend for the next 20 years. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing that they do it and it's a great experience, but very few make it then to the pro level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these two guys specifically in this article are still processing what that's like, because they always get fans coming up to them talking about last year's championship game. Nothing they've done in the year since. Right. No one seems to care about what they're doing in the D League, but they're always talking to them about how great that game was. And for Marcus Paige, who lost that game, you know, it's kind of a bitter memory for him to have to hear about it all the time. At least Ryan Arcidi Okono with Villanova won the game,
right?
So he can enjoy that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's funny because he has a story in there about how he was walking through a mall with the Villanova shorts on.
Yeah.
And this guy's like, oh, that was a great game last year. Oh, you must be a Villanova fan. Like, he played in the game, but he didn't even recognize him.
He's like, yeah, I passed the ball. And then they're like, oh, you're that Arsenio Kono guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how quickly you can kind of just fall off the map if people aren't paying attention to it. And I always kind of feel for those guys because they're almost good enough, but maybe not quite. That would be a really tough line to walk. It's better. In some ways, it's probably better to be like, oh, you're clearly not good enough. So right. You can just move on with life. But they're almost good enough. So do you keep pushing? Spring, I guess, or fall, I guess it is, when they have the develop or like the summer leagues in the NBA. There's always guys that are still hanging on, and they're like 30, and they're trying to get in. At some point, you just have to move on. But what do you do? It's what you've done your whole life.
Yeah, that is a difficult situation, which is why at least there are a lot of leagues worldwide. In the NBA D League, you're not getting paid a lot, and your hope is that you make it to the NBA. That's kind of what you're doing. You're kind of sacrificing financially to make it really big if you make it to the NBA. If you go overseas, though, you could probably make some more money, but you'd have to give up on the ultimate dream of going to the NBA.
Yeah, like we mentioned Jimmer Fredette earlier. Mm-hmm. Couldn't make it in the pros, at least not yet, here in the States. Went to a league in China, and he scores like 70 points in a game.
Yeah, he's torching them. He's still trying to get back to the NBA, but at least that way he's getting his name in the headlines and probably making more money than he was in the D League.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I think that's one of the reasons people really maybe are drawn to college sports or college basketball, because most of them aren't professionals. You know, they're people that are giving it their all. They're extremely talented athletes, but they're not going to be pros. And there's a certain maybe a little more of a pureness to it where the coach really does have more authority. Mm-hmm. The player's not going to talk back. The referees don't take a lot of talk and that type of thing. And it's maybe a little more pure in the basketball. It's not as much about entertainment as it is about playing the game well.
Right. And you could even say the same thing about the D League. Those guys can't afford to talk back to their coach either. You know, right. Obviously they're nobodies at this point in time. They can't at big time their coach. They can't boss their coach around. They can't get their coach fired. You know, they can't basically decide who comes and goes on their team like some superstars do.
Yeah, it's the distance between the greats and the almost greats is not that great.
And what makes a person great? Obviously, they have to stand out compared to all their peers. So if you didn't have all these other people that helped you basically define what greatness is, we would never know.
You know, all my years of watching basketball, I think I figured something out. It helps if you're over 7 feet tall.
It really does.
Yeah, that's not saying it's guaranteed, but it does help if you're over 7 feet tall. Pretty interesting write up there from the Washington Post. You kind of disappear. Year after epic NCAA final, two stars cross paths in the NBA D League. Grant, who's your prediction? Who wins the NCAAs this year?
Villanova repeat? I don't know.
You think so?
I'll say that. They're ranked number two right now, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It's always great. You fill out the brackets. It's fun to see. The lady that works in your office that is like the secretary and doesn't pay attention always wins the pool. Every place that I've worked previously here anyway, that was always the way it went. They would pick this lady. She was an older lady. She didn't care about basketball. She would pick based upon like the mascot or like, oh, I like that mascot.
Or the color scheme or just how the name sounds.
She beat all of us every time.
Exactly.
She always won. So is there a rhyme or reason to it? I don't know. I like UCLA.
That's a good call.
I like Lonzo Ball. I think he can play. So
His dad says he's better than Stephen Curry.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I do agree.
Time. We'll see.
I do agree that he makes his team better. So
yeah.
Who knows? We'll see how it goes. Or it could be some, you know, people always love it when it's some team you never heard of. They get on a run. Maybe Armstrong College. I don't think we're entering the tournament this year.
But we just turned down the invitation.
We turned down the invitation.
That's the difference.
It's invite only.
Well, I was going to say, when I was playing on a D team, there were probably less than 100 people in the stands, but I think it was a different D league that I was playing.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking about that. They should change the name to like Shooting Stars League or something. Mm-hmm. make it seem more exciting.
That's probably why they're going with Gatorade. Although that's just
kind of weird,
like brazen sponsorship.
Yeah,
not really excitement.
Future Stars League, something like that, as opposed to the D league. No time in life is a D a thing you want to see, right?
No,
you don't want to get it on your report card. You don't want. Hey, you made the D League. What about the B and the C League?
That's what everyone always asks. There's a lot of confusion about that, too. Like, are there A, B, and C leagues as well? And then you have to explain what it means.
They're like the JV team.
Yeah. That's
but
all this.
They wouldn't even be the JV team. They'd be like the freshman squad.
Right.
Hey, you're on the freshman team this year. But I graduated college. Thanks for bringing that article to us, Grant.
Thank you.
This is Trevor Radio Live here at 101.3 KPCG, and thanks for joining us online also at kpcg.fm and our live links at thetrumpet.com. They got Abraham, they have They have minor league hockey, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They have like a feeder system that brings in the better players.
Yep.
Same sort of thing.
Yeah, they have five or six different leagues in North America.
Yeah.
Based on regions, and each of them are, most of them are farm teams for the NHL. So an NHL team will have a farm team, which is a minor league team. They can bring players to if they want to develop them, like draft picks, or take players from them to fill in their rosters.
Yeah, and they have a team here in Oklahoma City, too.
Yeah.
So, but I wasn't sure if they fed the NHL.
The
but
Barons, it, yeah. Yeah. I think it was, they actually had some Edmonton Oilers draft picks playing on the Barons team, actually.
I always remember them because just the local sports, the coach has a really big mustache.
Right.
Really kind of a, he looks like a hockey guy, so, yeah.
But yeah, and can we have the Memorial Cup? That's like the big, and it's actually really exciting. I love, at that level, it's minor league hockey. It's like best of seven series, I think. And they just give it their all because for most of them, that's their, like with college basketball, it's the end of their career. Most of them don't go to the NFL or, sorry, NHL.
Or the NFL. NFL.
but yeah, it's just they give it their all and they're young kids. Some of them go on to play like world junior hockey tournaments and that kind of thing. But they're just young kids, especially when I was that age. It was neat just to put myself there and think like, wow, would I have the dexterity to be able to play in that kind of a level with like,
yeah,
millions of people watch around the country, and every little mistake, every good goal you make, people are watching.
Yeah, it's amazing opportunities some people have. You've got a really interesting technology article, and before we jump into that, I have this other technology note. This is cool. People are always trying to find housing that doesn't cost an arm and a leg. Very hard to do. You can kind of do it, but where are you going to live? You know,
right?
You can live in a box, but you're living in a box. Well, this is from AOL.com, and this is an interesting video if you want to check it out at AOL. It says, this tiny home was printed from a 3D printer in less than 24 hours. 3D printing is kind of the big thing. You can print with all sorts of materials. They did with concrete.
Huh.
It says, the San Francisco-based company, it's a startup, Apis Core, has created the technology that allows the printing of 3D concrete walls in less than 24 hours. And the company successfully completed printing and laying down the walls for a 400-square-foot tiny home in Russia, which was then furnished with windows, appliances, insulated for the cold weather, and, of course, the roof was installed. From start to finish, $10,000. Man, if you get a house, I mean, it's not huge, 400 square feet, but it's circular, so I think it makes good use of the space. Obviously, it wouldn't be great to have a family in there, but I mean, if it was just you, or I mean, maybe make it a little bigger, maybe make it 800 feet. I don't know, but pretty neat, $10,000. I mean, yeah, you'd have to think about it.
Yeah,
because even here, the tiny homes they try to sell, a lot of cases are 50,000, 40,000, or they're just really, really, maybe not all that livable. But boy, $10,000. I mean, it's less than a car.
Yeah, well, that's a really good idea. Use 3D printing because you can pretty much make anything out of that.
Yeah.
So it's a really good idea. And there's this other thing. I forget who made it. And it was a few years ago, but there are these blocks, styrofoam blocks between drywall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a Lego house. You build it with blocks with windows and stuff. And it stands up better to earthquakes than a normal house. It's quicker. It's cheaper. And they started building these across the United States, I think.
Huh. Yeah, it's interesting because people that are traditional builders probably would be like, you know, they wouldn't be as happy about that, or maybe they wouldn't think it's a good idea. But it is interesting. The printer that you have to set up is not that big to do this house, measuring about 16 feet by 5 feet, with the ability to be assembled or disassembled in 30 minutes. They set up the printer. They show you on this video. It's at AOL. And they've got the form, and then it just goes through. It makes its passes, and it drops the concrete in there. Depending on how much further the technology can be developed and perfected, the option to custom create and build tiny homes in the U.S., it isn't that far-fetched of an option. It depends on building codes and things. You got to have your land. You got to have your electricity and your plumbing and such. But if you could go on the internet and like click a couple things and say, you know, I'd like it to look like this, and they bring out this machine that's a 3D printer, and it just builds your house in less than a day. Take a vacation, come back in my house. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that it has a lot of potential. Maybe not necessarily for houses, I think, in the long run, but maybe for lots of other structures and small buildings and different things. You could, lots of infrastructure, you could do a lot of things with that.
Yeah, when I first heard about 3D printing, I didn't really grasp what they were talking about. Like, I envisioned like a printer on my desk, and I'm like, right. Well, what are you going to, you know, how's that going to work? But then when you realize, oh, okay, it's all they're talking about is to just have a mechanical, basically like an arm or what, however it is, and it's just filling in a form.
Yeah.
With whatever the material is. And I'm like, okay, that makes a lot of sense now. It took me a while to catch up to it.
Yeah, it's basically just shaping the shape, whatever you put into the computer is just building that shape for you in front of you rather than having to cut it off like a block or something like that.
Yeah, really neat possibilities there. You've got this right up as far as technology goes, too. It's from the Telegraph. This robot can be controlled by human thought. That sounds potentially awesome, potentially horrifying.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that, remember the Ghostbusters from years ago?
Oh, yeah.
When they weren't supposed to think about anything and the guy thought of
Mr. Stay Puft.
Stay Puft guy.
Whatever anyway. We think of will destroy us, and they thought of the huge mushroom or marshmallow man.
Yeah. Sorry for that distraction there, but some people might remember that.
Yeah, this is, I thought the same thing. This could be, have a lot of potential, and it could also be kind of disastrous, and that's this robot designed by researchers at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. It's this big red-looking robot, and it's controlled and triggered by thoughts rather than by typing something or voice commands. It's triggered by a positive or negative command from someone's mind, and it's really fascinating. They hook someone up, sitting across from the robot. There's this person, and they have this kind of like a toque on their head and a hat, and coming from are a bunch of different wires, and there's sensors. They can detect human in the brain, the different signals that are passed through your brain. And it's the robot's connected to that. And basically what this robot does, it's designed to sort objects into two categories. It can paint and wire. It can do those things. So the robot will try to do those different activities. It will paint something or move objects into two different boxes. And it's controlled by the human brain. So the robot will be trying to do this, and based on what you think, the robot will respond. So in other words, if you want the robot's picking up an object and putting it in a box, but you want it to go in the other one, if you think negatively, if you say like no, or you think like, oh, that's not right, the robot will stop and then put it in the other box just based off of your thought.
And so obviously they've developed a way to interpret the signal. I guess it's an electrical impulse of some kind. The signal coming from your mind as to whether it's positive or negative. How would you even figure that out?
Yeah,
you have to go to MIT, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've researched this kind of technology, but from what I understand or remember, it's your brain, when it's a positive or negative thought or reaction, because it affects your body, it's pretty obvious. Like, and if you're focusing on a certain pathway in your brain,
yeah,
if it's positive or negative. So this machine, it's called a ECG machine, and it's the one where it has all the different wires coming from the person's head suctioned onto the hat they're wearing. And so it can take the electronic impulse, and they can detect whether it's positive or negative in the human mind. And then the robot will interpret that as whether it's going a good thing or a bad thing.
Hmm.
And they say, Daniela Russ, she's a director of this, she said, you don't have to train yourself to think in a certain way. The machine adapts to you. So you don't have to think a certain phrase or thought or a different way. Basically, the machine will read your negative thoughts unique to you. So that's pretty fascinating technology. I know they've been working on that for a long time. But this is the first time it's been translated to a robot that's actually doing different activities.
Yeah, and it's obviously, you know, pretty basic functions at this point, but obviously if they can open the lid on how to do that, obviously you could do a lot of things. And I can think of a lot of positive things you could do, you could use it for. But unfortunately, there's a lot of negative things you could use it for, too. And that's always a always a difficulty, isn't it? Like Herbert Armstrong talked about in Mystery of the Ages, all this technological advancement, but yet we don't know how to stop evils. And so every time you see a new technology, especially something like this, you know, I think, wow, that could be great, but boy, that could be terrible too. Do you want to open up that Pandora's box? That's the question.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they talk about, is that the reason they're developing this technology is they can use it for controlling manufacturing robots, so robots who are working in assembly line or even self-driving cars. You can control a car just based on your thoughts. But also the big one, I think, is prosthetic limbs and communication tools. If someone loses the ability to speak, movement of a limb, or they lose the entire limb, instead of having the prosthetics rely on your muscle contractions, it can now be based on your thoughts.
Yeah.
So that's what they're hoping it leads to. But as you said, any scientific advancement ever has always been used for a wrong thing with humans. The biggest example probably is nuclear technology, where it can produce pretty much everlasting energy, or it can be used to create a bomb that can destroy all of humanity. And so with this technology, that's a pretty stark example, but for this technology, it can be used to help a lot of people, can be used to really revolutionize industry, or it can be used for warfare, or just be taken advantage of by people for a lot of devious purposes.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that kind of the first thought in some circles with new technologies? How do you weaponize it?
Yeah.
How do you get an advantage over other people in warfare? And a lot of times that's what advances technology, is the weapons. Or if you look at, say, the internet development, some pretty bad content and the desire to profit off of it is what pushed the bounds as to what you could do on the internet. So sometimes there's positives, but then there's also the negatives. So it's really a fascinating topic and a discussion to have. But it could do some great things. Like you said, I hadn't thought about the prosthetics, but that would be like the most obvious, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's was the cause of all this in the first place, with the researching and all the funding behind this. And with science, there always is a moral dilemma. Is this ethical? Will it actually lead to worse things in the future, or will the benefits outweigh the negatives? And I think with people on the verge of new technology, that's always the debate. For the most part, is like even with during the Industrial Revolution, when people were inventing steam engines and all that, there was lots of resistance against it. People thought it was unethical to have a steam engine because it would destroy their lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like that in any period of time. But with this, it's a little different because not only is it moving towards technology is integrated with the human mind, where you have like a biological and artificial intelligence basically being united into one. Is that ethical? Is that something we want? And then also, is the possible uses of it, they're pretty much endless. If they unlock this type of technology, you could mind control any kind of technology. Do we really want that to happen when we're already having trouble with security of our own technology today?
Yeah, and then I have to wonder too, if the path can go one way, can it go the other way? Like, if you can control it, can it control you?
Right.
Now, I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about it. But, you know, if the electrical impulses or the signals can control the machine, could they put impulses back into you that would control you and make you move and do things? Interesting. Stuff of sci-fi novels, but it's becoming somewhat realistic in some ways.
Yeah, I think if some sci-fi writers, like all the famous ones, like all the movies we've seen based on novels, or even the movie writers, just even 20 years ago, writing about these different things, if when they see them today, they must be flabbergasted or never would have thought that in their lifetime they would have seen this kind of technological development. So I think it is pretty exciting, and it's a testament to what humans can do, what we can invent and what we can understand. But at the same time, I think this will just be another example of how we don't know how to use it the right way, where greed or something else overcomes our the good-natured intentions of it all. Because, I mean, with prosthetics, there's millions of people could really, their whole lives could change. They could be able to spend time with their kids normally again, go have a job normally again, all these things. But it could be some unintended consequences too that could impact them. And I mean, that kind of integration is generations off probably, but still, this is a big step forward for them.
Yeah, I mean, people can communicate with each other and communicate ideas, it kind of takes the lid off of a lot of what we can do. And I mean, the internet has provided that, right, to where everyone can communicate to everybody else. And I mean, even if you go to a foreign language website, you can translate it with the click of a button. So ideas can be exchanged very quickly. And whereas obviously language and geography would separate some the advancement of certain things, but now you can have all the best minds in the world thinking about something. and you come up with some pretty amazing things like they're doing at MIT. But again, it's all technology-based in terms of trying to achieve some sort of technological goal, but what about the morality of it? There's no one there talking about that, I don't think. I don't think they have a class at MIT. Maybe they do, but not that they would have any ill intent, but unfortunately, sometimes good technology goes bad.
Yeah, well, I think just researching a lot about the Germany and Hitler's regime, where Hitler probably had some of the most brilliant scientists in the world, and the scientists weren't badly intentioned. They wanted to work for science, but they ended up creating some pretty terrible things for him.
Yeah, fascinating story. You can read the rest of that there at the Telegraph. This robot can be controlled by human thought, so could be awesome. It could be horrifying. Interesting story. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, all coming up. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Hirsch, and Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.